The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
It is the Ain't No Fang Podcast, and I am Steve Zinsmeister with Cody Fincher and Derek Montilla, as always. Let's talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks as we know them, which I feel that I don't know them. I have no clue what this team is anymore. They're winning every other day over the last week or so. What is the identity of this team? I mean, after going to Colorado, they score a ton of runs, but then again, so did the Rockies. Derek, give us a good idea of who the Diamondbacks are right now.
I don't know who they are. I have no idea what to expect out of this team. I feel like they did finally have that offensive explosion that Lavola was talking about that they needed to have so that they could kind of get that you know, course corrected, get back on track, and just have confidence in their ability to hit a baseball and score runs again. It's almost like he knows that they're inside of their own heads too much about it. Just like a lot of discussion has been around MLB about, you know, people that haven't been doing well, players that haven't been doing well in the season. A lot of it seems to be blamed on the fact that it's a short season. There's a lot of weird expectations. Some people don't even want to be out there, and some people are just trying too hard. It's definitely a weird guessing game as to why really good players in the league are having trouble, you know, struggling at the plate, having trouble finding success. And it's not all of them, because, you know, Mike Trout comes back and he's hitting the cover off of the ball, you know, from the day he steps foot back on a baseball field, right? The Diamondbacks just needed, I think, this kind of series with the Rockies. I don't know if this says more about the Diamondbacks or the Rockies, though, at this point. I feel like the Rockies' initial success was kind of like what we see sometimes at the beginning of a season, where a team kind of pops up out of nowhere and seems like they're going to be good. But then with time, they kind of come back down to earth and level out. During a long, you know, 162 game season. We don't have that now, so you don't really know if a team like the Rockies is going to come down back down to earth. Playing the Diamondbacks seemed a little bit more like what people were going to expect out of Colorado. And it was weird to watch that series and have even a 7-run lead not feel safe against the Rockies at times. I was really proud of their effort, though, and I thought that the one thing that they did really well was kept their foot on the gas offensively. They kept pressing. They kept trying to add on runs. They understood that no lead was really safe in Colorado either. So it felt good to see them have that sense of urgency to win that series, especially against the top team in the division right now.
Bear, what were your impressions of this team that seemingly can score runs now, but as far as the pitching goes, they're not keeping them off the board?
Yeah, and like the question is too, can they score runs? Because there's always that looming shadow of playing in Coors Field and high scoring games, and we thought they were able to score runs after the Houston Astros series, and they went into San Diego and couldn't score very many runs. So it'll be a true test too. They're playing the Padres again this weekend, so we'll see what happens with them. But this team to me is a team that they're capable of scoring runs, but their starting pitching is just so bad. They have 3 of their 5 starters have ERAs over 9. I don't know what's going on with Luke Weaver, why he is either not being allowed to pitch past the third or fourth inning, or once he gets to the fourth inning, he gives up a bunch of runs. I don't really know what's going on with Luke Weaver. Madison Bumgarner's on the injured list with back problems, so we don't know who's starting in his place tomorrow. Merrill Kelly's starting tonight, so Bumgarner's spot comes up tomorrow against the Padres. I mean, I don't really know what to think of this team either, Steve. Like you said to start, they kind of have this multiple personality thing where they're either they're not doing anything right, or they're at least or they're at least scoring some runs. I don't know, man. It's,
well, the thing about it has been the people that we thought we would count on, the people that we discussed in the beginning of the season that we thought were going to be no brainers as far as the pitching staff is concerned, are the ones that have been completely unreliable. I will forgive Luke Weaver for the fact that he came back from a pretty devastating injury that not everybody comes back from. We didn't know what we were going to see out of him, and you couldn't really judge in the one appearance we saw at the end of the season last year what we were going to expect out of him. I still think he's struggling to kind of get back on track. And I'm sure that there's some confidence issues along with, you know, some probably some pitching motion changes or something to that extent. I don't find his lack of success as troubling as I do Bumgarner and Robbie Ray. Bumgarner, we learned about the injury, so we understand that probably has impacted him and probably hasn't been something that's been discussed, but has been there this whole time. Robbie Ray, though, again, we've talked about him controlling his own fate for his next contract and what's going to happen with him in this offseason. I can't see the Diamondbacks pursuing him unless literally nobody ends up wanting him and they keep him around at a discounted deal based on what he probably expected to get on the open market. I don't know what to say about that. I have an easy fix, though. It's an easy fix. Promote Alex Young to the main, you know, starting rotation. Bring up Taylor Widener for the time being. Both of these guys have been excellent, and I know it leaves the bullpen lacking for right now, but, you know, the starting pitching is just getting you too far behind. I don't know what to do with Rob and Luke Weaver. I would say if you're only going to have Luke Weaver pitching 3 to 4 innings anyway, you might as well have him coming out of the bullpen. And we discussed last week Robbie Ray as an option out of the bullpen. I still don't think that's a bad option either. I just think that Alex Young still hasn't proven to me why he's in the bullpen, because he continues to be excellent no matter what role he's in. And, you know, a lot of the other young guys in the bullpen have also shown that they are ready to go. And they're, I don't know if they're kind of auditioning for that or if they're just filling these roles nicely, but it really has been, you know, the main starting rotation that's really put them behind in so many of these games. You can't have, you know, 5+ runs being given up by 3 out of your 5 starters every single, you know, 3 to 4 inning stretch of them starting and expect this team to have success when they're behind all the time.
Yeah.
Some perspective on the starting rotation. You talked about Luke Weaver's struggles, currently sitting just below a 12 ERA. Robbie Ray's is about 10.5, and then Madison Bumgarner just a bit over 9. Yeah, Alex Young is having a better season so far. It's tough when you're in the bullpen and we're only 3 weeks into the season. He's got 9 2/3 innings pitched, a 4.66 ERA, but that is about half of those other 3 starters that I just named. So you would think Alex Young would eventually get that opportunity. I'm not so sure.
I think he's given up, what, 3 earned runs? I
mean, like 5, that. I'm showing.
5, yeah.
What's right. Weird about Alex Young is just how much he's being used out of the bullpen. Like in a recent game, he came in the 7th inning and then only pitched that 1 inning. Like he was being used as a regular bullpen arm. It was really strange. And he pitched in the first 2 games of the Colorado series. So I don't even know if he's going to be in line to start in place of Bumgarner. I don't think they're ready to give up on Robbie Ray in the rotation. And I don't really understand why he's been so bad this entire season so far. I don't know what the deal is with him, and he looks like a guy that's struggling, like this team in a way, to find out who he is. And when you look at all the things he's changed, he lost 15 pounds, he changed his delivery, he changed his arm mechanics, and apparently now he's starting to tap the ball in his glove in a part of his pitching motion too. I'm like, this guy is like, it seems like he just doesn't know what's working and what's not. And it's just crazy to me. So I'm kind of with Derek. I mean, you only have what? How many more games? 20-ish games? Or not 20-ish games. 40-ish games to play. I mean, you got to start. If you're Torrey Lovello, they're 8-11 right now. And, you know, with this weird season, I guess you're never technically mathematically eliminated until probably the very last week of games, but you got to start thinking about making these tough decisions with guys like Robbie Ray and Luke Weaver, who are I don't know about Robbie Ray, but Luke Weaver, I'm sure they view as a future, you know, starting pitcher for this team. So you got to kind of make those tough decisions now, whether, you know, do you put Alex Young and Taylor Widener in the rotation? I mean, you have to keep Madison Bumgarner in there when he's healthy. He's your ace that you just signed to an $80 million contract. But yeah, it's crazy what's going on here with the pitching.
And in case you thought that Madison Bumgarner was having it bad. Robbie Ray has almost the exact same statistics. They've both pitched about 17 innings. They've given up about the same number of hits, about the same number of runs, but Robbie Ray has double the walks that Madison Bumgarner has. Robbie Ray at 14, and I believe that's one of the worst numbers in the National League right now. There are some good numbers to talk about. Obviously, in the starting rotation, we've talked about Zach Gallen plenty before. As a 24-year-old pitcher, their youngest guy in their starting rotation right now, he has continued to show consistency, and it's good consistency. It's not just like he's sitting at a 3.5 ERA. That would be good enough on its own, but he's sitting under 3 right now, and he pretty much has his entire time as an Arizona Diamondback.
More importantly, he set a National League record by allowing 3 or fewer earned runs in each of his first 19 games. So all of his starts at a major league level, he has not allowed more than 3 runs per start.
Wow.
I mean,
every start he's had has been a quality start then.
Not necessarily, because a quality start also requires him to go to the six innings.
That's right, true. You're right. Right.
And there was a time where, you know, Lavolo was being very careful with him early on when they first acquired him. And then early on in the season, I don't think he was letting him go very deep either. But that doesn't matter. That's the reason why before the season even started, I was predicting Gallen to come out and be our eventual number one. That consistency is really hard to find. You know what you can get out of him every day. And if the offense can kick it into gear and come out and know that they can score 4 runs, confidently know that their starting pitching is only going to give up 3, that's a pretty good, you know, ace to have in the hole. You know, I just don't know about Lavolo's likelihood to switch anything up at this point. You know, even with Gallen's success, I don't see him moving him anywhere in the rotation. But who knows? I don't know. It's weird because Lavolo tinkers with the starting lineup endlessly, but the starting rotation seems to be something that he's pretty set on at times. And I just hope they adapt in this short season, because they're not going to have a lot of time to let these guys figure it out.
And it's kind of hard to, in a short season, to like move Zach Gallen's spot in the rotation, because normally that would happen if you had a good amount of off days or around the All-Star break, when you kind of adjust your rotation to how guys are pitching. And they don't have that right now, which is unfortunate, because I would think Zach Gallen is definitely your ace, and Merrill Kelly is your second best starting pitcher right now. So I don't know if Lavella would go that far to make Gallen and Kelly the 1-2 punch, but yeah, you'd like to be able to match Zach Gallen up with maybe the other team's ace, if you will.
Yeah.
Merrill Kelly is the real feel-good story here, by the way. A 2.29 ERA currently. I know he's got one less start than all the other guys. He wasn't even necessarily guaranteed to be in the starting rotation at the beginning of this season. We were talking about the possibility of Alex Young making it. Mike Leake, before he decided to opt out of the 2020 season, had a good chance at being a major league starter over Merrill Kelly. So he had to earn that spot in the rotation, and now he's showing that hard work is truly paying off.
Yeah, it's a great story. And just his time in Korea and everything that he's done, being, you know, a 50-year-old rookie, you know, it's great to see that he is continuing to get better. You know, he didn't have a lot of time to adapt to MLB, and he was still pretty successful last season, regardless of what the numbers say. I thought he had some pretty good starts and was consistent for the Diamondbacks. They could count on him as well. I think he just started to get, you know, his pitch count up there and started having shorter starts. I think this season he's definitely figured out how to be efficient and effective with his pitches. That's something that just really drives me nuts about a lot of the starting rotation, is how nobody seems to want to pitch to contact. No one wants to be like a ground ball pitcher anymore, where they just throw a real heavy ball that, they're going to give up a lot of hits, but you know you have a really good infield behind you that's going to field those balls. So as long as you can keep them on the ground, you're going to give up hits and you're not going to get a lot of strikeouts, but you're going to be effective at the end of the day of limiting runs and mostly keeping your pinch count low, because this entire starting rotation has a problem with pitch count. It seems like everybody's at 50 pitches by this middle of the second inning. I just I don't know what they can really do. I can hope that the offense carries over from what they did in Colorado. They did set a record for the most runs by a D-backs team in Colorado during a three-game series at 32 runs over those three games. So the hope is not just that Coors Field effect. The hope is that they've really tapped into something here and can keep that offense rolling, especially against a really good young Padres team. I feel like we've said this before about series that they've had, but I think that this series is a litmus test for them to see where they're at. No matter how good that series was in Colorado, I feel like Padres are good, legitimate contenders to the National League West, you know, title. I want to see what they can do against them. Now they're on a roll. They're on a high from Colorado. No joke, no pun intended. But they, you know, if they can come into Chase Field and where they've struggled offensively at home, frankly, and can continue this role and take two out of three against the Padres, I'm willing to start looking at this as a turnaround for them. I need to see that first.
What was kind of encouraging about the Colorado series too, with the offense, was they weren't all coming on big 450-foot home runs. A lot of the hits they were getting and runs they were driving in were on singles and bloop singles and guys just putting the bat on the ball and putting the ball in play, which we haven't seen consistently yet. And the whole, you know, Coors Field argument is, okay, well, you can hit a 500-foot home run there every time.
True.
But, I mean, yeah, we had Cole Calhoun hit a home run. Starling Marte hit a really long home run. But a lot of the runs they were driving in and hits they were getting were singles. And so that's encouraging to me, as maybe they can carry that stuff over, maybe having a better approach at the plate, not necessarily how far they're hitting the ball, but how much they're putting the ball in play and hitting it in the hole and putting the ball where the defense isn't. So I thought I was really encouraged by how they were scoring their runs in Colorado, when I'm sure it's so tempting to just go up there and try to swing as hard as you can and try to hit the ball as far as possible, because in Coors Field, it's going to go 500 feet no matter what. So I was encouraged by the type of at-bats they were having and the type of hits they were getting.
Well, and as we look at the offense, I don't know what the heck is going on with Eduardo Escobar. That's the big one in the starting lineup that you look at and you think, oof, that's really bad. He's one of those, I think you were alluding to earlier.
171.
Yeah, you were talking about stars that, for whatever reason, the start of the season, they just can't figure it out. Anthony Rendon, Christian Yelich, Rafael Devers, they're all hitting in the 100s. It's kind of the same for Eduardo Escobar currently. He just can't seem to figure it out. But I will give credit to the Diamondbacks lineup, as they have really rebounded well. Christian Walker, Ketel Marte, David Peralta, and Starling Marte have all hit over 300 so far this season. Starling, by the way, is on base 45% of the time right now. His on base is .446. That's
really
incredible.
Good.
That's really, really good. And again, this is all small sample size, so I don't want to pretend like any of these bad seasons could become decent seasons or the good ones could turn bad. It's entirely possible. The one that remains, that I'm fairly confident will remain a bad season until the end of time, is Jake Lamb. Jake Lamb has about half the plate appearances that the starters do, so I don't want to pretend like he's an everyday starter, but he is getting a decent amount of playing.
Well, he basically almost is, how much he played. I mean, he hasn't played a lot recently, but to start the season, he only missed, what, like one of the first five games because the Padres started Joey Lucchesi, who's a left-hander. It's crazy how much he was playing.
You have to realize...
They have 19 games total, and he's played in 12 of them.
Too many.
Yeah. The plate appearances is different, though, because you could come into the game as a pinch hitter or not play very long.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
He only has 33 plate appearances, which is less than half of the starters, except for Carson Kelly, who's a catcher.
What's he have,
different.
Two hits now?
Jake Lamb has two hits.
Yeah. Wait, get to his batting average, Steve.
Two hits. He has a batting average of .069.
Nice.
Oh,
he has an on-base percentage.
Never play him again. They have to keep him at that batting average.
On-base percentage of .182. His slugging is 103.
With that batting average,
beautiful.
His OPS,
no, more importantly,
in total,
his OPS plus.
OPS in total is 285. Didn't know that it went that low, by the way.
I didn't know an OPS plus could go negative, but apparently it does because his OPS plus is negative 19.
And the best way to explain OPS plus, in case people don't know, is 100 even is a average player. And if you're over 100, that's good. If you're under 100, that's bad. I had no clue that the OPS Plus could go negative. Negative 19 right now.
I did not. Yeah, like for instance, the seasons that we talk about that he's constantly kind of given credit for are, you know, 2016, 2017. His OPS Plus in those seasons was 114 and 112.
Which isn't even that amazing. It's a little bit over a 100.
It's a little bit above average. And yeah, it's mostly the first half of the season where he kind of stunk it up in the second half in both of those seasons.
Can I ask? I have a question.
Go for
it. Maybe one of you guys knows the answer. Why, when Jake Lamb plays,
bodies are buried?
That's not it.
No, okay, sorry.
Why, when he plays, does he play at first base? Why is he not just every time Jake Lamb plays, they move Christian Walker to DH and they put Lamb at first?
I do think at first, early in the season, it was because Christian Walker was dealing with a groin injury. I do believe that.
But now, every time Christian Walker is starting pretty much every game at first, but then when Lovello does put Jake Lamb in the lineup, they move Walker to DH. Is that kind of like a half day off, like,
yes,
to get him out of the field?
I think so. That's exactly, yeah,
because Christian Walker was a Gold Glove finalist last year.
Oh, groin injuries are one of those lingering injuries that like feel like they're gone, and then it can flare up in an instant. Like, you'll get a cramp, or you'll stretch for like trying to beat out a throw at first base, and that's all it takes to re-aggravate, or at least make you feel that injury, remind you that injury was there. So I think that's probably why they're being careful with them. Is it probably isn't completely gone yet, you know? It just doesn't completely disappear like that. It's kind of like a, you know, an ankle injury. You can rehab it, you can have it no longer be sprained, but you're always going to kind of feel that injury, and it's never really going to 100% go away. So that could be what's going on right now. I wouldn't be surprised by that. I think that Lovello always does is overcautious when it comes to resting his guys and giving them a break. And I also think that, you know, despite what he says, he doesn't have to tell us as the media 100% that, you know, that their all-star first baseman is only at like 60%.
Let's move to another topic going on in baseball that's got a lot of attention, not Diamondbacks related, although there may be a small tie-in. Ramon Laureano from the Oakland A's getting involved in a, shall we call it, an altercation with a coaching staff member from, guess who? The Houston Astros, because
altercations involving the Astros. That's crazy.
Bear, walk us through what happened.
Okay, so basically, Ramon Laureano was hit multiple times in their
three times
in their series against the Astros, and after the third time, he kind of had enough of it, and he didn't charge the mound or anything. He walked down to first, but he wasn't happy, of course. And then the video replay, at least that I saw, shows an angle of Ramon Laureano jawing it up with someone in the Houston Astros dugout. And it wasn't a player. It turns out that the guy jawing at Ramon Laureano that started the whole freaking brawl was former D-back shortstop and current Astros hitting coach Alex Cintron. And what basically happens was, if you haven't seen the brawl, go look it up. It's funny. Alex Cintron is John at Ramon Laureano, and he's saying all this stuff. Word has it he said something about Ramon Laureano's mother, which is a big no-no.
Off limits.
And then you see Alex Cintron kind of wave him over, like, okay, let's go, come on. And then Ramon Laureano charges the dugout. And then Alex Cintron, the coward that he is.
Just say it, Bear. He didn't want none of that smoke.
He didn't want it.
He didn't want none of that smoke.
Four other guys in front of him.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Some a player tackled Ramon Laureano
yeah.
and held him on the ground. I can't remember who the player was.
It was very it was Batman villain-esque, the way he sent his henchmen after
yeah.
the guy to do his bidding. I don't know what to say about it other than it's something that I feel
hilarious.
First of all, it's weird for the Astros to be hitting someone because they're upset with something they did. Dude. That they feel like that there's snitching going on about because Laureano was a former Astro himself. And I think that he honestly was taking it all in stride, considering that they hit him not once, but three times during that series. He did have some words after the third hit. I would have had some words after the first hit myself, but he waited until he got hit by pitch three times in the same series. Now, the Astros are a team that are walking around with this chip on their shoulder, just looking for a fight right now. That's what I feel is going on. Like they're ridiculed and they are, you know, rightfully so, right? Rightfully yeah. so, because the majority of this team are players that were, you know, a part of this team when this scandal happened. But they are, you know, they should expect it. And it should be kind of one of those understood things where they know that they are going to be hit by pitches and they are going to have teams upset with them and they should understand why. It's weird for them to have some sort of situation like this where they're intentionally hitting someone to try to get some sort of revenge or redemption. Like, all right, well, I guess everybody in the league just needs to start pummeling Astros batters. And then just let Altuve, you know, swing because he's hitting a below like 150, I think, at this point.
Yeah. So, you know. Like the whole Astros mentality this season, I'm not advocating for headhunting. And I don't agree with guys getting hit up and in the head area. But like they have to know that some pitches are going to be coming for between their numbers on their back. Yeah. And just hearing guys like Carlos Correa and of that little pissant Alex Bregman, he's such a jerk. And it's just like they really, you can just tell they do not care that they cheated. They do not care. And I mean, honestly, MLB created that environment where they don't have to care because none of their players were punished because they all got amnesty or diplomatic immunity, whatever you want to call it, for ratting out AJ Hinch and Alex Cora and the ringleaders and Carlos Beltran, the ringleaders for the whole video cheating, sign stealing scandal. And none of their players got punished. Alex Cintron was suspended 20 games for his role in this brawl, which is 20 more than any other Astros player got suspended for cheating the game to win a World Series. It's insane. Joe Kelly got 8 games for not even hitting anybody. He just threw behind Carlos Correa twice. I mean, he was trying, but Joe Kelly's control is horrible.
And he did the little crying thing.
Yeah, the crying lip. Oh, hilarious.
Fantastic.
And like those guys got suspended, but you're not going to suspend any of the Astros players for cheating? MLB doing?
Let me give you my best comparison. And the only thing I can equate this to. When I was younger, one of my favorite shows on the planet was the show Friends. And there is a very well-known storyline in Friends in which one of the main romantic storylines, if you're familiar with this, revolved around Ross and Rachel. And
the entire show revolves around Ross and Rachel.
Well, yeah, sure. You could say that. I'm just saying the thing that made everybody hooked on the show was the Ross, Rachel, will they, won't they relationship. And the fact they finally did. And then they broke up and then they got back together and then they broke up forever. Right. So the Astros and their attitude, it just reminds me very much of Ross in this situation. And I'm not going to say Ross is wrong or not. But there's this clear reluctance to accept any responsibility, even if it's just like verbally for the appeasement of the person that you want to spend time with and be with, for the appeasement of Rachel. He could have just easily said, yes, I was wrong. You're right. He refused.
We were on break.
He refused to ever succumb to the accusation that what he did was wrong, because in the eyes of many people, including the show's creator, he wasn't wrong because they were on a break. But I'm just saying, that's the Astros' attitude about this, is they have this attitude like as if they, when you tell them, well, you guys cheated, they're like, eh, that's what you think. That's how you see it. It's like, no, that's how we all see it. And they're like, well, eh, I don't know.
That's how the commissioner's investigation saw it.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's just, it's this thing of being like,
oh my gosh.
I feel like their attitude is sign stealing in baseball, period. Yeah, we crossed the line or whatever, but was there really
video cameras and trash can signals?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it doesn't say anywhere in the rules you can't bang a trash can, right? It doesn't say that.
Steve, do you watch? Have you watched Friends? Are you a Friends fan?
Yeah, I've seen Friends. I don't know that I'm a huge fan. It's funny though. I like Joey and Chandler. I probably relate most to Chandler. Oh,
Chandler's the best character.
Yeah, for sure.
In my opinion.
Speaking of people who just refuse to admit wrongdoing. Did you guys see the quote-unquote not an apology from Zach Plesac, the pitcher for the Cleveland Indians?
Oh, who yeah. Those
was guys. Sent home.
Oh, my gosh.
So for people who don't know the story, Zach Plesac, a starting pitcher for the Indians, went out one night in Chicago while they were on the road, and apparently he was hanging out with some people, didn't make it back before curfew, so the Indians sent him back to Cleveland. He had to drive back with some staff
member
or something.
That's the best part. They made him drive back in a rental car for
5 hours. And then they had a team meeting, by the way, that he was a part of where they said all this. And then the team flew back, and then they found out that Mike Clevinger, another starting pitcher for the Indians, was out with Plesac that night and sat through the whole meeting and didn't tell anybody that he was a part of this. So now he's also quarantined. And
the
then,
best part about that, though, Steve, was apparently in the team meeting, he stood up and defended Zach Plesac. Yes.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
And like, because he's defending himself.
I get they're
he's
best
such
friends.
An idiot.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Why are we getting so mad at Zach? Did he really do anything that wrong, you guys?
Because he knew
come
that
on.
They were going to find
mean,
out.
Come on.
He knew they were going to find out.
Like, every team has this guy. They're calling him the, like, COVID compliance officer,
the hall monitor.
Yeah, basically that's what he is. And I guess he saw both of them leave the hotel, but this guy has, like, he has power to report what they're doing. He has no power to stop them. He can't say, you young people, get back in your rooms. Sure. You know,
that's a hall monitor.
He shouldn't be stopping them. I mean, he could be stopping them in the aspect he's like, hey guys, I don't think that's a good idea.
Right. I'm pretty sure he can give them his opinion.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And they're like, screw you, old man, we're going to the bar.
But that's the thing is they know how dangerous this is. They've seen already what's happened to teams like the Marlins and the Cardinals. The Cardinals are still having outbreaks, and that's not even discussed anymore. The Cardinals as an organization have had more members turn up positive for COVID than the Marlins did.
By the way,
they still can't play baseball.
By the way, the Cardinals are supposed to resume their season tomorrow.
Yeah.
They haven't played in a long time.
They haven't played in 17 days. They've played
since
5
July,
games.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, they've played 5 games this year. They have I forget the number, but they have like 3 doubleheaders this weekend or something like that.
How is that fair? How, like, is that fair to them or their opponents?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
they're playing the Cubs this weekend, and they have like 3 doubleheaders against
them. I don't think they're going to make up all those games. I really don't.
I said when I saw that on Twitter, I'm like, over under how many injuries the Cardinals are going to have.
Well, and think about it this way, too.
They haven't played in 17 days.
Part of me thinks about this because I'm a fantasy baseball player, but think about all those players that are going to play in one game but not the other. Like, they're going to need to use their bench a lot more in those doubleheaders than they ever would if they had played
those
games straight up.
Well, now there's only 7-inning games. That'll solve everything.
You know what bugged me about the Plesac thing, if I can finish up on that? He went on Instagram, I don't know if it was yesterday, the day before, and posted a video and literally captioned it, not an apology. And then he proceeds to say, and this is one of those things, I don't know why athletes do this, but they record themselves in their car while they're driving, and they say, hey guys, just wanted to come on here and tell you the truth because the media is saying a bunch of stuff, and I just wanted to spit the truth at you. And I'm like, do not come at me and say this is not an apology when all you should be doing is apologizing to your teammates. Yep. You don't even have to say anything to the public.
Right. We don't care. You're not apologizing to us. Apologize to your teammates, or at least say on an apology publicly that you are apologizing to your teammates. Those are the people that you put at risk. Those are the people that you put in danger. And you even put the other team at danger because you're touching a ball that you could have COVID with that other people are going to touch. You put the umpires at danger. You put anybody in that stadium at danger.
Well, what's funny is Plesac said in his statement, in his unplanned statement, because he clearly didn't have this thought out, he said, I just want to remind everybody that while I was out, yeah, I missed curfew, but the CDC says that people can go out if they socially distance and not have groups of 10 or more. Our group was only 8. And I was like, dude, you're parsing words here.
People were there. Yeah. You went to a bar.
Also, just because the CDC says that it's safe for somebody to do something a certain way, your league says that you shouldn't. Your employer tells you, do not press this button. And you said, well, the CDC says it's safe for me to press this button. And you press the button. And now when you're punished about it, you feel the need to go to your own Instagram account and spit the truth? Come on, dude. Apologize to the people who you hurt, whether it's their feelings or physically put their health at risk. Carlos Carrasco is a cancer survivor. Adam Plutko came out and said, dude, this guy straight up lied to all of us, and so did Clevinger. He called them out, and I'm glad that he did.
Clevinger might be even worse than Plesac because he stood there in a team meeting around everybody, including Carlos Carrasco, who, like you said, is a cancer survivor, leukemia survivor. He gets on the plane with those teammates and could possibly we haven't heard if Plesac or Clevinger have tested positive or anything like that. It seems like they haven't, but
I don't think so.
You don't know.
And that's their
team plane and possibly risk exposure to these guys. Like these two guys are just idiots.
Well, their defense is that they didn't.
We haven't tested positive.
It's not like they contracted it or were around someone that contracted it or were exposed to it or anything like that. But that doesn't matter. It's like Steve said, there are rules. They are given to you by your employer, and these are the rules to follow. It
shouldn't be that hard.
I know this isn't a basketball podcast, but one of the things that the Suns credited their 8-0 run in the NBA bubble to was the fact that every single member of the team took it seriously. And there were several players on the team, including the coach, that also brought that up, that fact that every member of the team, with the exception of what DeAndre Ayton did with a stupid interview, every member was completely committed to arriving, to getting all their testing done, to staying within the bubble, to eating the food without complaining about it, and to winning basketball games and trying to give their team a chance. I think really that's what it's about, especially in these shortened seasons. You don't have an entire season where you have to forego all of these normal luxuries and everything. But to be honest, you're a major league athlete. You're a professional athlete. You have as much at risk at this as anybody else because you could contract it and your health could be permanently compromised by it because we have no idea how this reacts from person to person. You have no idea if the reason why you no longer get to play baseball is because you contracted COVID. So it's ridiculous for someone who's a professional athlete not only to be exposing their teammates and everybody else we address, but to be exposing themselves to it. For what? For a night out so you can go out and hang out and have a good time? Like, to be honest, we need more people that are committed to their sports during the regular season anyway that don't go out during the season and don't go out. And I know that's crazy sounding, but, you know, that are more committed to their sport and being an athlete during their season. I can't imagine being this reckless during a pandemic when there are rules in place that forbid you from doing this thing that you did. It's completely ridiculous. And I just don't understand why it's so important for people who are living in a hotel and playing Major League Baseball. And they're not like me. I am stuck in my house. Do you know how insane I'm going in this house? I'm not even in the studio right now. I am in this stupid office that I've been stuck in since March. I have a right to be one of those people that breaks out and breaks the rules and goes out. You're flying on planes and going to hotels and playing in different stadiums and stuff. Don't give me this whole thing about needing to go out and needing to put yourself at risk for, you know, for dinner at a nice restaurant and, you know, maybe stopping by a bar. That's ridiculous.
I think we'll end on that. The Diamondbacks get the Padres tonight. Most interesting to me this weekend will be who starts tomorrow night in place of Madison Bumgarner, as he's been dealing with some issues injury-related. But we'll be on it. It's the Ain't No Fang podcast. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. Alongside me is Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher. As always, you've been listening to the Ain't No Fang podcast here at ArizonaSports.com and the Arizona Sports app.